welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast, bringing you today this special Tech Field Day bonus edition of the show. My name is Ethan Banks, at EC Banks on Twitter, with a few comments about what you're going to hear. So GestaltIT.com put together a networking Tech Field Day in San Jose, California, back on September 16th and 17th, 2010. Greg and I were there, and we recorded several of the vendor presentations. And this podcast is an excerpt from Force 10 Networks presentation. So in this, you're going to hear systems engineer Peter Wallers talk through Force 10's Ethernet route switch platforms. He's going to explain their basic architecture and technical characteristics. And Peter is interesting. He is a witty guy, and he's fun to listen to, and I am hoping that you enjoy him as he presents and interacts with the Tech Field Day delegates. Guys like Greg, Ivan Pepelniak, and Brandon Carroll, get right in there with Peter, ask some questions, and mix it up a bit. And also, from time to time, you're going to hear Stephen Garrison, Force 10's Vice President for Marketing, interject as Peter threatens to divulge some company secrets here and there. Here we go.
So Force 10, we try and keep it simple. We have three main lines. We have a top of rack, which is our S series. We have a mid-range chassis. If you see my handwriting, you'll know why I was originally given a computer. I do block printing now, and even that's fairly legible. All right, and then we have our top of the line, which is the E-Series. So where do you want to start with? So let's start with the E-Series. So the E-Series was originally our Force 10's first product. We first started shipping the E-Series, the EtherScale, with a whopping 28 10 gig interfaces on it in 2002. There's probably not a transaction you do on the computer today that doesn't at some point go through this gear. It's funny, none of you are familiar with it, everybody uses it. This was right now it's topping out at 140 line rate, 10 gigs. We have oversubscribed cards that can bring it up higher. There are some of the things about it that are really kind of interesting and kind of unique in the industry. It has the large one, the E1200, is a 14 slot chassis. Now, the 14 slot chassis is 14 I/O blades with two extra slots for our dedicated route processors. It has a separate big lid bank of switch fabric modules. It's got another 10 switch fabric modules on it, which is all sort of, again, we'll call it go across the bottom here.
Why 10?
I'm sorry?
Why 10? Cisco's running 5 in the Nexus.
10 of them is 6.125 gigabaud. Basically, we've had the original E-Series had 9, and then we just wanted an extra one. Basically, the idea is
wanted to go binary 1-0.
Yeah. We were going to go to 11, but
of course 10, Greg. Come on, that's
the joke. I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I can't answer. Why?
Yeah.
It's like it's 14 plus so chassis, so why is it called the 1200?
Okay, so in the Nexus 7000, the fabric switches you go 2, 3, 4, 5. Two's an N plus one. And then as you need more bandwidth per slot, you just keep slotting out new fabrics.
No, you just buy it. We just fill it up.
Right. And same sort of thing. The more bandwidth per slot, you just buy more fabrics.
No. You buy the chassis, you get 10 fabrics.
Okay.
You can make 10 fabrics, and no matter how many line cards you have in the chassis, it will multiplex trapped across all 10 of them. And it allows you to lose one and still be at 100% of line rate across all everything on the chassis. And then when you lose number 9, you drop 12% of your overall backplane.
Right, so it's a fat cost trade.
Yeah. The reason we have small and many is that some of our competitors, if you go back 10 years ago, big switch fabric cards that were like 100 grand each.
Yep.
2 inches. One, customers didn't want to pay for that to spare depot.
Yep.
Secondly, it's a bear to cost manufacture that. So what we try to do is reduce the cost of manufacturing by having smaller switch fabric modules and also reduce the sparing cost of the customer. So that's actually the logic. E1200, don't know myself. Why is C12?
You're the marketing guy.
I'm not going to answer all the questions.
So, yeah. Effectively, every line card is going to all the suite of the fabric modules.
Right. Okay. Right. And then each of the line cards, they've all got their own CPUs, and they've all got their own CAMs and their own memory. So it's a fully distributed architecture. The route processor that sits, you know, there's two of the route processors there. It's a three CPU architecture. So basically you've got, we call it RP1, or it's probably too small for anybody to read, but, so basically you have the RP1, RP2, and the CPU. So we have the control processor, which handles all the management functions, so all of the CLI, SNMP, SSH, syslog, all of the friends, that all gets handled by this CPU, and it's got its own dedicated bank of memory. RP1 handles layer 3, so all of your layer 3 protocols get gropped there, and RP2 handles all of your layer 2 protocols. And so the beauty of this is that, you know, really your route processor, all it's ever going to handle is, you know, it's going to maintain some state, it's going to run some, you know,
it's chilling most of the time.
And basically, you know, something comes in, it's a packet doesn't know. It's like, you know, it's a route update. You get an LSA that comes in. It's going to get updated. It's going to go across the back bus and update all of the line cards. So that basically, if you've got a line card here and a line card here, traffic comes in, it goes to the switch fabric, and then it goes back out because this CAM and this CAM are all identical based on what
the board does. So your every line card runs has its own TCAM and its own all that sort of stuff. That's how you get your CAT. Because the Cisco stuff, all the TCAMs on the soup, isn't it?
No? On 6500. On 6500 with the old line cards.
The 67 series line cards with the BCM modules. BFC, BCM, whatever. Well, anyway, they started getting smarter on that. And correct me if I'm wrong, if you go from line card to line card in the 67 series line cards, I think that still goes to the switch fabric.
On the suit. The switching fabric is on the suit.
That's still a different point.
They have passive backplate.
This is a completely passive back. I mean, this is a big. I mean, we've never. The stories I've heard is that there was one RMA, there was one chassis that got RMA because some guy just jammed the blade in and bent the pins on the back, and the other was like a forklift blade went to the side of it or something like that. So I mean, we're talking about a big passive chassis. It's just nine or ten sheets of Kevlar with, or 9 sheets of copper with Kevlar and traces. Sort of the big one. We sort of have ones that are more towards geared towards routing with larger CAM spaces. And then we have smaller ones more geared towards switching.
So you're talking about the line cards?
Yeah,
Different line cards.
Yeah. Right? You can get sort of routing or switching line cards depending on what kind of application.
Cisco's got two cards. They've got the Nexus 7000, they have the M series and the F series.
Mm-hmm.
And I always get them confused. The M series is the layer 3 and the F series is the layer 2 fabric cards. There's two cards in the Nexus 7000. There's the M series, which do layer 3.
Okay.
They do all the layer 3 routing and switching. And then you get an F series, which is the 10 gig non-locking line rate for routing cards. But they do no layer 3. So if you actually have to route on the card, you have to pop up to an M series card and then it pops back down to the F series.
That's different. I mean, our cards, it all does layer 3. The only difference is just, you know, how much CAM space it has, how many routes can it maintain, a lot of entries can it maintain. And that's just because people have different types of architectures and want full tables on everything, and they want 20 BGP full table BGPs and something like that. We can do that too. But the idea is that, you know, we have solutions for types of applications.
Yeah.
This also comes in a 7 slot chassis as well, the E600. Again, why the 600 has 7 slots, I don't know. But basically, it shares line cards, shares route processors with all of it. Same general arc, same architecture.
It's the half size.
It's the half size. These are our largest selling product. We sell lots of them.
To companies you can't name, probably.
I can name it. He's the one who can name them.
That's how drunk he gets tonight, guys. Let's be honest.
There you go. There's the challenge.
Lips, think shifts.
There's the challenge.
He mentioned Yahoo. And that's one of my customers.
Salesforce, Yahoo, that's New York Stock customers. Exchange, and Facebook are pretty well-known things that we're allowed to talk about. So.
Yeah.
I think we hope you get cheap dates, guys. If anybody here needs a date, we have a deal with E-Harmony with a 3-day.
So while you're on the E-Series... Mm-hmm. And because this is probably, I think most of them agree, probably the best session we've had today, technical-wise. there's actually people on Twitter now talking about it. And somebody asked on Twitter, like, I'm asking a question about it, about a bug that reloads the RPs every 297 days.
Oh, that's one.
397 days. 397 that's old. Days. That's been fixed. That was
and they're asking if that's been fixed yet.
Yeah, it was fixed.
Apparently they haven't updated their code ever.
So. That was fixed in code.
398 days.
Was 2 years ago. And, yeah. And the real actually, story behind yeah, that is that was not an FTOS bug. That was a 32-bit counter that was in the NetBSD underlying operating system. And as long as we're talking about so many day bugs, there was also an 897-day bug, which also was the same sort of thing. It was a 32-bit counter in NetBSD that.
It was certain that
problems as well.
Linux kernels had this problem as well.
You know, and people hit the 897-day bug. You know, you feel bad for them, but it's like
we're up 3 years.
Yeah.
If you haven't patched your code in 3 years,
you might want to think about it.
I mean, there are bugs that are embarrassing. That's not really one of the embarrassing bugs. You know, so. Lots of buffering, custom ASICs. This is actually kind of good juicy stuff. Mid series chassis. We have a C300, a C150. It's 8-slot and 6-slot, continuing the nonsensical naming scheme. This is also another full blown line rate platform. This guy supports 64/10 gig interfaces. So you have an 8-slot, an 8-slot, 8-port chassis. Each slot has 96 gigs of bandwidth. This has been extremely successful against all the 6509 products. And because basically it was sort of just blow the doors off the 6509 as far as performance goes. Line rate, you could snake line rate 64-byte packets through every single port on this switch, and it's fine. Totally happy. It's all hardware. Again, these are all hardware-based platforms, so it's all
same line cards as the ECUs.
No, they are not. They're different. This is a completely different, non-interchangeable. This also would come in closer to the price of like the 4500. So people who were looking at 6509s, this was always a really, really nice, hey, look at this, dual RPM. So one of the things here is that this also has completely hipless failover because of the disconnect between the switch fabrics and the route processors. What we did with the C-Series is the whole idea was that, you know what, there's a lot of people who really love a lot of the attributes of our E-Series, but they don't want to pay for it. And so they wanted something in a more affordable platform. And so what we've got here is we went through a little bit more of the merchant silicon, and there are some other economizing features. So like if you have dual RPMs, basically the switch fabric actually does reside on the RPM. So if you lose an RPM, it will duplex traffic across both of those to get the 96 gigs. If you do lose one of the RPMs, or if you fail it over, there is a slight blip. Failover times between the RPMs it depends on what protocols you're running, but usually it's between like 5 and 200 milliseconds. So, it's not completely hopeless, but it's pretty respectable.
Also layer 3, right?
Oh yeah, all these platforms do layer 2 and layer 3. The top of rack is actually probably our busiest section in that we've got more products, more top of rack comes in different flavors. We have 24 and 48 port POE and non-POE versions that are on the S25 and the S50, NV, and there's also a P, which is a fiber switch, 24-port SFP fiber switch. These have been in the market for a couple of years, pretty solid. There's a lot of these things out there in play.
Somebody tweeted me the other day, he said the great thing about them is they're in stock.
Yeah, we actually, there's, people want 49, 48s, and it's like, what calendar year you want them. I did, to be fair to Cisco, I think that they've ramped up. I don't think Cisco's showing the supply constraints that they had been. I think their supply chain kind of caught up.
they, like many of us, and I don't know, you know, how much you guys saw of this, but I mean, you know, it was like, was it 2008, November of 2008, everybody was like ready to like, everybody was like going into gold because they didn't think their currency was worth anything. I don't think anybody bought it for like about 6 months, but what we saw at least at Force 10, and what I saw personally was that all the people who like all of a sudden were going home and not working or getting laid off and this and that, they're all going on, they're all getting on Facebook and Zoom games. And guess what? All of a sudden, it's like all of these companies, like, oh my God, it's like our network traffic is going up because now all these people are going to have more time to screw around on our websites. And so, but it was really kind of funny because, I mean, what you know, the economy is like in tank and full stop, and all of a sudden we're starting to get really, really busy. And the same thing happened for, I assume, happened for Cisco, but then all of a sudden, Cisco had, you know, they shut down all their fabs.
That's right.
They shut down all their fabs and they couldn't supply them.
And the design and the software development software.
Yeah, well. Yeah. But I mean, it was kind of interesting. There was kind of this sort of like this contrarian kind of thing going on. People are saying, "Oh, business is awful," and it's like you know, I'm kind of busy. And it was kind of nice. It was neat. So so these are in stock.
these are. Was it you that said, Steve? You was somebody on Twitter who said, yeah, no, every time Cisco says they can't ship me a something or another, I just go to Force 10 and buy another S50 or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, these. See, here's the other thing about these. These are, again, full line rate platforms. So we're talking about 4x10 gig and 48x1. All this is a full line rate platform. Well, they do stacking. They go, you know. So you have options. You can do stacking as well. There's also not many switches in the market that have the 4x10 gig uplink. So people can do stuff like, you know, here you have a rack switch. People start talking about, you know, building these CLOS architectures that kind of look like this. And, you know, they want to run OSPF and... And you've got 40 hosts here. There's rack 100. Or yeah, you can go higher than that. Anyway, but you get the idea. So if you run like OSPF on here and you've got equal cost multipath across all your spine here, you can have essentially one, you know, line rate from any host to any host across the whole fabric. And you can scale that pretty darn big.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is sort of like, you know, the Hadoop thing. Oh, people want to do Hadoop, and you know, yeah. Hadoop clusters kind of.
The trick here is convincing. Well, the challenge I've had with this design is everybody wants to have layer 2, but they don't want spanning tree. And I'm sitting in meetings with the server guys going,
it's like, okay, there's multi-chassis lag.
Yep.
You know, it all depends what you want to do. I mean, this all works. What is it about layer 2 that people want?
Yeah.
Not everybody's doing VM. People are doing Hadoop. The Hadoop stuff's generally not virtualized anyway. It's just an address, and people get to it. So, but anyway, to go back to sort of the rack switch stuff here. So, you know, this is actually really kind of nice. People really like that ability. So people will put these in top of racks, and they'll have 10 gig attached storage and 1 gig clients. And actually just released and launched about a month or so ago. We have our new S60. The new S60 is our latest switch. We've actually got a couple other sort of switch platforms that are coming out in the next couple of months that are actually really kind of cool, but can't talk about.
Unless you guys promise to retweet in a month, we tell you.
Yeah, you guys, I'll come back.
S60 has got what, 1.5 slots?
So the S60 is sort of the next generation here. Here we're talking about basically what had happened was that we had this switch. It's very inexpensive to get this switch. These things are cheap. And again, we would go into sort of some very high demand environments. And well, there are some environments like big memcache environments where you can tweak the buffers on this thing, which handles most people's issues, but sometimes you just can't do it. So the S60, we had basically fielded a bunch of input from lots of our customers. And when I say lots of our customers, I mean sort of probably about, you're trying to get me to divulge the customers that I don't know what to talk about.
Hey, I want you to connect the dots of who designed what or
basically large scale portals to the Bay Area. take your pick.
Yeah.
That's not about 500 portals there. So
can I know we're short on time, so I want to keep moving on. All the other vendors, like Juniper, for example, is running their XR200, which is bonding 8 chassis into a single layer 2 plane, control plane.
Mm-hmm.
And Cisco's got VSS and VPC, which is bonding 2 chassis to do layer 2 coherence. So you don't actually have spanning tree loops and loop avoidance and all that sort of stuff. Are you in that space as well? Are you doing chassis bonding?
Yes.
Okay. So same sort of thing.
Yes.
Layer 2 control planes become coherent. Yeah. Layer 3 control plane.
Here's.
Yeah.
Get your Twitter accounts ready. I'm about to spew another gem. And again, this is me. All opinions spoken herein are not necessarily the opinions of my employer. Anyway, if I don't trust stacking on the rack, why in God's graces do you think I would trust it here?
Well, it's my point exactly. That's why I was asking the question.
Yeah. just because you can.
Yeah.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And it's like, and you know what? There's environments where you might really want to do it, or it might be worth trying.
Yeah.
I have an intense fear of split brain. Mm-hmm. Split brain is no brain.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys catch that one? But the S60, this is worth talking about. This is actually a really kind of a cool switch. So when we talk about the S60, sounds relatively pedestrian. It's a 48x1 and 4x10 platform.
It's got a 5-channel over token interface coming for it.
Is that a feature request?
Yes. It's a feature request from us, yeah.
It's got 1.25 gigs of packet buffer.
Ignoring us. Appreciate that. Where's the FCOTR support? Come on, we got it.
This is high end box. You need FC over 50 here.
I saw somebody's network topology with a FIDI ring on it about a month ago.
I had to go to the bathroom. Everybody took it. We actually.
He's happy with it. So anyway, so the S60, it's got 1.25 gigabytes of buffer.
Wow.
Nice.
And that's dynamically allocated, or you can carbon offset.
There is a pre-allocated, basically, so each of the ports has 8 hardware queues, so the 1 gig ports are all start at a minimum of 1.2 megs per queue per port.
Right.
10 gig is 12 per queue per port. Pre-allocation of that leaves an additional 350 megs or whatever in the dynamic pool.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to probably buffer way more packets than you're comfortable with from a TCP.
Yeah. If you went any deeper, you'd be going backwards.
When you talk about things like latency, like memcache, you're better off with a slow packet than a dropped one. There's a lot of sort of environments where people are really, really sensitive to the dropping of packets, and then as soon as you drop the packets, oh my god, it just causes all kinds of chaos.
Well, now you sound like a storage. Better off with a slow packet than a dropped one. Can't drop stuff.
They can't drop stuff. You don't want to drop stuff. So the other thing that's actually interesting about this switch is it was really sort of built with virtualization in mind. So we're building a lot of hooks into this thing. So the idea is that here we're going to have a switch that's going to be able to interact with the hypervisor, your hypervisor of choice. We want it to be able to work with VMware, we're going to be able to work with Zen, we're going to be able to work with KVM. We don't really, the idea is that we don't want your choice of hypervisor to matter when using this switch. And so you'd be able to use the hypervisor with the switch.
So that'll be your top of rack data center preferred option. It's got all the fancy fun stuff to do.
Front, back.
QoS, one of the big challenges around 6500 is that the QoS implementation is like knobs. And the Nexus implementation is a bit hairy as well. You were talking 8 queues, 12 queues. Is it consistent across all the modules, or is it
across the different platforms? I haven't really dug into all the different QoS functionality of this. That's kind of new. So, but it's like 8 queues, and so Like historically on this, there were 8 hardware queues, 4 were usable by customers.
Mm-hmm.
The remaining 4 were all used by the operating system. Same on the C-Series. The E-Series had all 8 available for use by the customers, and so we've got some people who definitely use all 8 queues. And the reason why you could use all 8 on this is because there was dedicated it's called the party bus that the RPMs talk and speak to all the different RPMs on.
Yeah.
Because this had the party bus, it made all the other things available. Now, here, the idea is that, I also think one of the things that's also interesting about this is we were a little bit slower to market and measuring this out.
Yeah.
And I think part of that was we really kind of wanted to find the right chipset. We wanted the right chipset that was going to have legs that we could really grow into and grow the software into. Because there's a bunch of things that chipsets capable of doing that we just haven't even opened up yet. And so it's all just announced by the fact that developers to start enabling it. But some of their scripting ability on this, I go back and forth with different people, but the idea is to give people flexibility. It's like if you want Perl and Python hooks, you run Perl and Python in this box. If you want to have basically cron jobs to monitor, you can do things like, you know what, I don't care who's on this box, but they better not touch that interfaces X, Y, and Z. And if anything changes on that, I want to see a syslog or a trap or something like that. And there's mechanisms that allow you to do that transformation. So the idea is that this is not only being positioned sort of as the premier top of rack tank solution, but it's also going to be something that will allow people integrated into their virtualized environments, or if you want to do some sort of other types of scripting or monitoring, and that the platform can be able to provide the ability to do so with open tools, with tools of your choice, and not with the idea is not to into some scan solution that we sell or only support and charge off.
We'll stop there. Hey, thanks for listening. Remember to visit our sponsor, Ascolta, at ascolta.com, a Cisco training provider that can do a lot of great stuff for you. If you want to email the Packet Pushers, packetpushers@gmail.com, and of course, leave a comment on the packetpushers.net website about the show. We want to hear from you.